So as we talk about sloth today, I'd like to first paint for you a few pictures. Maybe you know that your friends are like this, or maybe your family members are like this. Or maybe the person that you came with today is like this. Don't nudge them, don't shoulder them, just, you know, don't elbow them, don't do anything. Just look at yourself and see, hey, do I know this person? Okay, I'll paint you a few pictures. First one, let's say you have a friend. Your friend's called John. John, you've heard from him that he's going to be looking for a part-time job in the summertime. And so you know you have another friend who owns a restaurant, and that restaurant's hiring. And so you said, oh, John needs a job. I have work from a restaurant, so why don't I forward that sort of job opening to John? And so then John's response was, oh, yeah, thank you. I will look into it. Let me think about it, and I'll pray about it. And so a few weeks gone by, you asked them, and then you said, John, have you done the thing? And John says, no, I'm still looking. I'm still thinking. I'm still praying about it. I haven't sent any resumes, though. I'm still thinking about it. Another few weeks later, the summer is nearly gone now, and John is still jobless. Apparently, he's still thinking about it. He's still praying about it because he thinks restaurant is not the right job for him. Let's take another friend, or maybe another family member. This is a family member of yours. Okay, don't elbow anybody, just think about it. A family member of yours, his name is Peter. Peter is on dish duties. He has been on dish duties, in fact, for the past 3 days now. It's his turn, and the dishes have been there in the sink, and it stinks now. And so you remind Peter, it's your dishes that you have to do. To which Peter says, sure, I'll do it. Okay. Meanwhile, Peter is on the computer, gaming, yelling at his teammates, and then when he's done with that, he goes on the bed and scrolls TikTok and Instagram. And we ask him, Peter, you gotta do the dishes. And you know this responds well. Okay, I hear you. They're still on the bed. You know anybody like that? Let's skip Peter for now. Let's go to Susan. Susan is your friend. Susan, you and Susan are in the same group project together. You have finished your part a long time ago, but Susan still hasn't done it. And in fact, the presentation is tomorrow. And so you send Susan a reminder. Susan, the presentation is tomorrow. You should probably do your slides and prepare for your part. Susan says, okay, I will do it. And so you check in the middle of the night, the presentation tomorrow, you want to make sure everything's good to go. And you looked at Susan's part. Her part of the group presentation has typo all over the place. The images are not lined up. It's slanted. Some of her slides are missing. You don't know what the main point is. And there's mistakes all over the place. And you sent her a little text and you try. She might be asleep already. You try anyway. Are you sure? Are you done with those slides? Susan replies you. Yeah, it's done. It's fine. And so when you get to this point, you have, you know, John and Peter and Susan, and you're so fed up, so you ask them, Susan, do you even care? Do you even care about our marks on the group project? And you look at Peter, who's still on the bed. Peter, why are you on the phone all day? You don't have better things to do? And I mean, John, what do you, it's the summer, it's gone, next week is already school. Like, what do you want to do? Like, do you have interest? Like, do you have, what is your goal? What is your plan? To which they tell you, I don't know. I don't really care, to be honest. What do I want to be when I get older? I want to retire. This person is the person who plays ranked in online games. You guys play online games? Plays ranked in online games, does nothing, gets carried by everybody else on his team. He wants the results without the work. In fact, what's so annoying about this person is he doesn't just do that in a game, he does that in real life. He gets carried by his mom, he gets carried by his dad, he gets carried by his friends, classmates, and then coworkers and everybody. He gets carried in real life. There's a Christian writer, a Christian author called Dorothy Sayers. She describes this type of person, or to be exact, she describes this sin really well. This is what she says. Sloth is the sin that believes in nothing, cares for nothing, seeks to know nothing, interferes with nothing, enjoys nothing, loves nothing, hates nothing, finds purpose in nothing, lives for nothing, and remains alive only because there's nothing it would die for. Do you know a person like this? Now, at this point, if you were to confront John or confront Peter or confront Susan, they're going to ask you a question. Why is sloth a sin? Why is sloth? I'm not hurting anybody. I'm not doing anything bad. One of the things they would probably tell you, it's my personality. I came out of my mother's womb slower than everybody else. Your personality, INTJ, you're an architect. You work a lot. You know what my personality is? C-H-I-L. Chill, man. That's me. That's my personality. That's not a sin. I was made that way. Second thing they will tell you, it's a lifestyle. It's a choice. It's a choice to enjoy this life. Life is short. Enjoy it while you can. That's my choice. It's not a sin. In fact, when they think about it longer, they're going to tell you, it's actually a blessing, Carson. Because my parents live in this house and they say you can live in it as long as you want. And when I die, it's going to be yours anyway. Your coworkers and your classmates, you know, they're capable. They don't mind doing my work. You know, work is chill. There's no expectations. Everything pays well. I don't have to worry. That's a blessing. God has blessed me so that I could be lazy. That's not a sin. What do you tell them if that's their response? Today we're going to look at what the Bible says about sloth and why sloth is not just a personality, it's not just a lifestyle issue, it's one of the deadly sins. Today's passage is going to come from Matthew chapter 25, verse 14 to 30. Jesus says this, "The kingdom of heaven will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property." It's like there's a boss. Your boss is going on a vacation, but he didn't say how long he's going to be gone for. Oh, you know, that this boss called all his staffs over one day, lined up all, you know, outside of his room, and says, "I'm going to give you a share of my company. I'll give you a share of all of my wealth. I'm going to entrust them to you. You have a percentage." And so he first called Tom over. "Tom, you come over here. Tom, you get 5 talents. Tom, you get 5 talents. And then he called Mary over. Mary, he gave 2 talents. Each talent is approximately 20 years away. So all you have to know is 5 talents and 2 talents is a lot and a lot of money. So all the staffs lined up one by one as the, you know, get into the boss's room, and the boss just kept giving percentage and shares of, you know, his wealth to them. And then finally, it's your turn. You're afraid. You're shaking. You're nervous. Not because you think you won't get as much as the others. In fact, you're afraid that you're going to get too much. I mean, you have been in this job, 9-to-5 job. I mean, sometimes if you're lucky, 9-to-4, let's be honest, 9-to-4 job in this company for the past 20 years. You've enjoyed good pay. There's no overtime ever. If you work for a bit more, you can retire with a nice package. Go on cruise, retire, go to Hawaii, go to Japan, travel all around the world. In fact, the best case scenario for you, you go into the boss's room and he fires you right then and there, gives you a nice reimbursement package. And so you get into the room, you go in front of the table, and then the boss says, "You're going to get 1 talent, 20 years of wage." 20 years of wage? That's 20 years too many, boss. I don't even want to work for another 20. I'm going to be gone in another 10 years. But before you had a chance to say it, boss called the next staff over, and as soon as he's done with everybody, he left. And so you went back to your little cubicle, looked at a check that's handed to you. With all of that money, you wish you could e-transfer that to somebody. You wish you can ask somebody to do it for you. But everybody's too busy. Nobody is talking to you. And so you thought, well, he's just gone, right? He's not going to be back tomorrow. Let's go home, think about it, and come back. Next day you came back. You're curious. So you went to see all of the people, Tom and Mary. What are you doing? You saw Tom. Tom already had a business proposal running. He got his business friends and science friends and all. It turns out they worked all night and they generate some ideas. They are going to invest in spaceship. They have a name like Polaris. It's a weird name. Anyway, you asked that. You already have a business proposal. Like, did the boss tell you ahead of time this is what he's going to do? Like, how did you worked all night? Come on. He just left yesterday. Just, you know, just take a break, man. Spaceship? That's risky business. Spaceship? That's like sci-fi stuff. That's not going to work, Tom. That's risky. And so you look at Mary. What's Mary doing? Oh, Mary. Turns out Mary also went to work right away because she had a food interest. She always likes to cook. And so she got all her chef friends over yesterday, and they were doing a bunch of research. And turns out her plan is going to the food industry. Din Tai Fung. What kind of name is that? That sounds like a swear word. We are in America. Soup, dumplings, that's not going to sell, Mary. You're going to get laughed at. You're going to lose all that money. You know, food business is very difficult work, very tiring work. You're going to lose all that money. They didn't care. They just kept working. So you went back to your cubicle. You looked at that big check in your hand. What to do, what to do, what to do with money? You don't have, any particular interests. You don't have any particular expertise. Starting any projects, a lot of work. You thought about investing them. You haven't kept track of the stock market. It's very risky, you heard. You have to do a lot of homework. You got tired of thinking, so you put the check back into the drawer, went out for a coffee break. I mean, the boss isn't here anyway, so you're going to just say you work from home and just check out for the rest of the day. In fact, a few weeks later, during a coffee break, you thought of a brilliant idea. The best move, the safest move, is no move. I'm just going to leave the check in the drawer. That's the only way to guarantee you're not going to lose any money. Safest investment, most conservative plan. You already thought about an explanation because you're going to retire soon anyway. Why put in all the effort? And so with that decided, you let out a big sigh of relief. You went for your fifth coffee break in the day. In the afternoon, you scroll some YouTube, TikTok, look at some cruise lines, and you call it a day, check out work. And a few years have passed. Space travel is now a thing. In fact, Tom's project is called the Polaris Program. They just sent the first commercial spaceship up there, and the astronauts are walking in space. Din Tai Fung is everywhere. US, Japan, UK, coming to Vancouver next year, I think. And then the boss finally came back. Just out of nowhere, he just walked into the office. He came back, and you said to yourself, finally, my retirement letter is ready, right here. Now, the first thing the boss did was to check on everybody's business, as you might expect. Set up accounts with everybody. So everybody lined up in front of the boss's room and presented what they have done. Tom and Mary went first. They said, boss, we have doubled what you have given us. And the boss saw their business, their new space thing, the restaurants, the soup dumplings, and he let out a big laugh. And he stood up and patted Tom and Mary on the back and the shoulders, and he told them, well done, Tom and Mary. You guys are so good at what you do. You guys are so faithful to the company. That is great. We're going to celebrate your work tonight at the company gala. Bring all your staffs and all everybody that was involved in the program. Get them over here. We're going to celebrate. And so one by one, by one, by one, everybody went to the boss's room, you went to your drawer, and you took out the envelope with the check in it. You rehearsed your lines. Somewhere in there, you had to remember to sneak in a little retirement spiel, and you're sweating, you're shaking, you're anxious, and you got into the room, you swallowed your breath, and you said, boss, I know you have high expectations. You expect all your businesses to return profit. In fact, you expect all your staffs to generate revenue. You don't take losing as an option. So in fact, I thought about it for a long, long time. I wasn't confident at all I could do any business and not lose money. So I thought the best move is no move. I kept your money safe. Here's your check. The boss looked at the check. His demeanor changed. He slammed the check onto the desk and he said, you wicked and you lazy and you're so useless. If you knew I had high expectations, just leave with the bank. You at least get some interest back, but you chose to do absolutely nothing with it. And he yelled to his assistant outside, come over here, take the money and give it to Tom and throw this guy out of the company. I don't want to see this man ever again in the door. Now, what is Jesus talking about when he was giving that parable? He started by saying this. He says, the kingdom of heaven is like what I'm going to tell you in the parable. What does that mean? It means that what he's about to tell you is a description of the people who follow Jesus as king. When you follow Jesus as king, you live in a different way. You go by a different set of values and priorities and worldview. So in other words, how does one live when they decide to follow Jesus as king? Now, you might have been able to figure out in the parable that the master or the boss or the CEO represents God. And the servant and the staffs are us. So the next thing to figure out is, what is a talent? Talent is a measurement of money. 20 years of wage to be exact. Well, to be approximate, actually. 20 years of wage to be approximate. But this is a parable. So the talent doesn't just mean money. In fact, it doesn't mean what you think it means now, as in like skill or gift. Talent is a symbol that represents everything that God has entrusted to us. It can be, and it includes, I mean, your relationships, your health, your time, your knowledge, your experience, your gifts, your skills, your possessions, everything that you have. And everybody has different amounts, but that's not the main point. Everybody has talents, and a lot of them. God entrusted all of these talents to everyone. Now, the problem that we have in the story is that the master left without telling everybody how long he's going to be gone for. And in many ways, that's the same way today. God entrusted talents to his people. He didn't say when he's going to return. Now, because of that, we see some different responses. Some people like Tom and Mary, they went to do business right away. But some, like the one who received the one talent, he stalled, he waited, and perhaps he thought he had a lot of time, and so he chilled, and he relaxed, and he TikToked, and he Netflixed, and he just enjoyed his life. And so when the master returns, he gave the servant three rebukes. You're wicked, you're slothful, and you're worthless. Now, I trust that at this point, you know, you can feel that sloth is something, slothfulness is something that God is displeased with. It's a sin because it disregards God as the master. It disregards the fact that God has entrusted these things to you and you have taken them as to be yourselves. Or you have just ignored his commands altogether and continue to live as if you are the most important person and you live by your own rules and your own priorities and your own comfort. Now, I have a question for you, though. If slothfulness is bad, slothfulness is the thing we should get away from. What is the opposite of slothfulness? Is it hardworking? Is it diligent? Is it to be smart? Spend all day working nonstop? I think you know the answer. What does the master say to the servant who doubled the talents? Good and faithful. Slothful is what we should avoid. Faithfulness is what we should pursue. Faithfulness is what we should pray to have and to become. I want to spell out a little bit for you what the difference is between faithfulness and slothfulness is. The first thing, a person who is slothful disregards and ignores what the master has entrusted to them. They waste their time, they bury the gifts, and they watch opportunities pass by them. Now, a person who is faithful knows that what they have is not theirs. What you have is not yours. It's entrusted to you. So they do all they can. They get a hold of each opportunity to invest and to work with the talents given to them, or entrusted to them, to be exact. Second thing, a person who is slothful puts their own comfort as their top priority. They believe life is to be enjoyed. Life is short, take it slow, chill out, relax, have fun. That is what's important. Now, a person who is faithful puts the master's joy and as their top priority above their own. Not that they don't want to enjoy, not that they don't want to rest, not that they don't want to celebrate and have a party, but just not now. What they're doing is delayed gratification. They know this. Because they know they will enjoy and they will party and they will celebrate and they will have fun when the master returns. In fact, the master says this. The master says to Tom and Mary, to the faithful servants, well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your master. So when a person puts the master's joy and delight above their own, The promise is the master will share his joy with you. And so at the end of the day, when you look back at your life, you'll feel proud of what you've done. You'll feel good about how you spent your life because you lived a purposeful, a meaningful, and a faithful life. So now the question we must ask ourselves, and hopefully you have more time to think about this after today, what does being faithful mean for you? What does your life look like when you live knowing that what is yours is entrusted to you and not yours? What does your life look like when you know that one day the master is going to return and settle accounts with you? I really pray that you will have time to digest what this means for you. But today I want to take some extra time to spell out what this means for a specific group of people in particular. There's a lot of us in here that are senior high, college, young adults. I want to address you primarily, but it doesn't mean everybody else is not affected by this. You can just take it and see how you can apply it. For those people, I'll give you three considerations. First consideration, some of us in here, you're not very sure of what your gifts are. You're not very sure of what to specialize in. In fact, you try long enough and you don't have any interest, you feel like. You're not excited to go to school or you go to work, so you have a tendency to what? To slack, to not go to school, to skip this class. Encouragement to you. Be faithful in the little things and in the big things. In the class that you chose and the class that you have to go. In the work that you like to do and the work that you don't like to do. Be faithful in the little things and the big things. Here's why. You think you know yourself. You think you know what you like to do. And so you only spend time doing things you like to do. But the truth of the matter, especially if you're a young person, you're still discovering yourself. The last thing you want to do is to give up on all the other areas of your study and your opportunities because you think you should be a hockey player. Not to say you can't be a hockey player, but a lot of times when you come out of university, come out of high school, you're going to do something entirely different. And so you have shut all of these doors because you thought you knew. And I want to add one more thing. What's important when you're doing all these little classes and, you know, electives that you don't like to do, whatever, you have to remember your point is not to just learn algebra. Your point is not just to write a good lab report, because you know what you do when you are being faithful with these little things? You learn skills and build up good habits that can pass along to everything else that you do. You know what you learn in algebra? Problem solving. You know when you need problem solving? Like every single day. You know what you're doing when you're writing a good lab report? You are practicing how to be attentive to details. You know when that's good, or who likes people that are attentive to detail? Everybody. Ask your boss, or when you get one. Well, how about this? When you're faithful in the things you like to do, and faithful in the things you don't like to do, those little things, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're building up good work habit. And that's going to transfer everywhere. In your work, in your serving, in your home, in your projects, in church. So just because you don't like it doesn't mean you can't be faithful on it. Be faithful in the little things and the big things. In that math algebra class that you absolutely hate, and also in the music class that you like. Second consideration. Some of y'all, you might not be in that camp. You might be a little bit later on in your life stage, or you have very clear idea of what you want to do. You want to go into a certain field, get into a certain school, go into a certain occupation, be financially independent, move out of the house, get a certain girlfriend or a boyfriend, marry a certain person, buy a place, and then get a car. Reminder, don't sell your life away. When the master has entrusted the talents to you, your time, your expertise, your youth, your knowledge, your training, he didn't expect you to give those talents away to a mortgage. He didn't expect you to give these things away for a company so that you can get more money. So, what should you do instead? What does being faithful mean for us? May I suggest that for you, the top priority right now, is to discover what the Master has entrusted to you. What are the talents that he's given you? What are your skills? What are your gifts? What are your interests? What are your strengths and maybe non-strengths? How are you made uniquely? And how do you do that? I trust you, and I promise you, you don't do that by staying at home all day. You're not going to find your gifts and your talents and your whatever by scrolling TikTok all day. It's not there. What you need to do is you need to do more things, gain exposure, step out of your comfort zone, do different types of things, take a bunch of electives. How about slow down your study and do co-op? I know maybe some parents don't like this, but how about slow down your study and do a co-op? You're not wasting your time. Do co-op. Try things that you say, do I like this? Do I have a strength at this? How about try serving in different positions at church? Involve in different ministries? Because a theory is this, you know more about the world. The more you know about the world, the more you know about yourself. The more you know about yourself, the more you know about what those talents are that God has entrusted to you. And when you know what those so-called talents are, you know what business, so-called, to do. And for some of us, we call that calling. We call that vocation. And so as you discover this so-called calling or this vocation or what you believe your talents are best used for that purpose, what you do is you just tweak your life's trajectory slowly, step by step, one degree at a time, to align with what you think you should be doing. That, we believe, is being faithful, especially for the young people in here. Now, last point I want to make. I might have said the last point was the last point I was going to make, but this is the actual last point I was going to make. What is the reward to those who are faithful? One of them you already know. Joy and celebration. Enter into the joy of your master. Joy and celebration when Jesus returns. There's actually one more phrase that we skipped, so I want to read for you the full compliment that Jesus gave to his servants. Jesus says, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master." "I will set you over much" is the reward. This is a reward for the new heavens and new earth. Yes. Some of you thought you're going to retire in heaven. I have bad news for you. There's work to be done in heaven, but it's good work. Joyful work, rewarding work, work without the frustration and the heartaches and the pain and all that stuff. But it's not just a reward for later. It's a reward for the now. It's a promise for the now. The reward for faithfulness now is more talents now, more gifts now, more knowledge now, more opportunities now. One of our pastors, Pastor Wilbur, when he preached on this, and he likes to talk about faithful servant, and when he talks about this, he uses a quote. He's a superhero guy, like as in like he likes watching superheroes movies. And so he says in Spider-Man there is a quote: "With great power comes great responsibilities." Pastor Wilbur says Jesus is saying something one step further out. He says, Jesus is saying, with great faithfulness comes great opportunities. In fact, with more faithfulness comes more opportunities. The reason why he says this, because that's his story. And the reason why he says this is because it's Pastor Fizz's story, Pastor Gabriel's story, is my story. I want to tell you a little bit about how I became a pastor here in this church. The point is not for you to say, "Oh, he's whatever, he's doing so good, talented." No. I'm a simple man. I'm just a human being. But I want to show you the reality of this promise. I became a pastor here at this church in 2019. I was 25 back then. It all started in 2013. When I joined the music team, I wanted to be a piano player in the music team. I was 19. And so when you go through the music team, what you have to do is you have to go through a period of playing as a keyboardist, a keyboard role. If you have no idea what that is, that's okay. It just means you play the boring stuff. You play the simple stuff. Well, that's what people think, actually. Nobody likes to play the keyboard because you don't get heard. You don't play a bunch. It's a lesser role, as people might think. And so my first scheduled keyboard duty, I tried my best. I was a young fella. I was a little kid. So I tried to be as responsible and faithful as I can. You know what I did? I asked the music director at that time, can I come into the office 2 weeks earlier so I can practice on that keyboard? Can I come in to watch you practice and sit into your practice so I can know and learn about how to play? And you cannot believe how many emails I've sent him asking about how do I do this, how do I do this, what do I do, what do I do, what do I do? And so after like 2 to 3 sessions of this, the music directors, and I'm quoting here, essentially they said, little kid, you're faithful over playing that keyboard. I will set you over playing the piano now. So then I moved to play the piano. And then after a little bit, at the beginning I needed a lot of supervision. And then later on, I didn't need as much supervision and I could play the piano on my own, just with the singer. And that means it's more difficult. And so I practiced, I prepared everything I could, and I prep and you know all that kind of stuff, and I tried my best to do it. Now that happened for a little while, and on a side note, I also joined small group because of music team. That's gonna come back a little bit. So then after, I think it just like maybe a year, maybe like a little less than a year, music directors came and they said, Carson, you're faithful over your own piano part. We want to try to set you over other people's parts. You're gonna be a band leader. We're gonna call you to be a band leader. What that means is you lead the band in practice, you lead the band and you do arrangements for them. And I do my best, I try to put in a lot of effort. There's so many flows and arrangements that I send out at 3 a.m. in the morning because I fell asleep from school. I fell asleep and I woke up, oh crap, I have to do it. And then I do it, and then I try to balance school and then part-time work. I was teaching a bunch at that time, small group, church serving, like not unlike a lot of you right now. Oh, I also have other commitments, and I was dating Fizz at that time. A lot of work to do. Not that she has a lot of work. I have a lot of work to do. After a little bit, Pastor Ava, she wasn't a pastor back then, I think. She was working with the youths back then. So she came to me and she says, there was a need, Carson. A bunch of youth students, they want to worship. They have music background and they want to join worship. We need somebody to teach. Can you teach them? To which I thought, I have a lot of stuff to do. I am teaching every day and then like I have a lot of other commitments, but I can try. How long are you saying? Oh, okay, one session and you have three practice for one session. Okay, I can do it. Let's carve out some time. And so then we did the first youth-led worship, and I think that was happened for a week, and then there was like approximately two or three practice sessions. Some of you might remember that. Now, after one of those sessions, things seemed to work well. So then Pastor Wilbur and Pastor Ava at that time, she came to us, she came to me and says, little kid, you're faithful over a little, one session. We're going to set you over a year of sessions. We're going to set you over a few years of program. Why don't you start a band with them and teach them? So in 2014, we did something called the Axe Band. Probably nobody here remember. There's a youth band, a bunch of the youths come to practice, I write arrangements for them, teach them. 2014. So after all this time, the band leader seems to be working well, the band class seems to be working well, the small group attendance, I've been going to small group and I try my best to show every time. And then the need came up. Music director at that time stepped down, and then their other music core member, she went on to parental leave. And so there was an opening. And so the pastor approached me, you have been faithful over that little class that you have been doing, and the band leading and the small group, you want to try working here part-time. So in 2015, I was 21 at that time. I became a music director to lead the music team. Fast forward a little bit, 2 years later, the music team is going, okay, nothing has burned, nothing has crashed, everything. I'm still learning a lot on the way. And then the other staff, there's another staff that oversaw, the production team and a bunch of other teams. She left because of her life transition. So the pastor at that time came to me, look, kid, you have been faithful over one team. You want to try leading two teams? You want to try to go into production? There's a brother here that I served in production at that time. I'm going to tell you, I was so scared to go into production. You know why? Everybody there, especially in the core group, is much, much, much older than me. They have much more knowledge than I do. They're so much more experienced. They know all about the connections and the soundboard and the presentation and all that kind of stuff. I was a little kid that knew how to play piano. Let me try. So in 2017, I went to help lead the production team. And so things went on a little bit. I was doing small groups, and now I started to lead small groups. And when leading the production team and the music team, I was vision casting, doing trainings for them. And there comes another opportunity. English service just started back then, 2017 and 18. Carson, you have been faithful when you were speaking to the production team and doing vision casting, music team when you're doing vision casting, small group when you were leading them. You want to try speaking to a bunch of people on Sunday morning. You want to try to preach a sermon in their English service. That was my first sermon, 2018, I believe in somewhere in September or in the summertime. I was 24. I talked for way too long, as I often do. So then after a little bit, I kept, you know, doing the sermon, the music team, the production team, the small groups, and it's later on, a year later, 2019, the pastors at that time called me to become a pastor. I was 25. There's a couple of very important things I want to point out in this story. With more faithfulness comes more opportunities. How did I get to 2019 Carson? Now, I'm still learning a bunch. I'm still trying to discover who I am more and more every single day. But how did we get to 2019 Carson? I joined the music team. How did I join the music team? You practiced your piano. So you come out here today and you remember this. If you want to be a pastor, you practice your piano. The point is when you're faithful over that little thing, practicing those C major arpeggios, four octaves up and down. Come on, nobody wants to do those chromatic scale. Like that's so boring. But you know what that meant? You're faithful over practicing those chords and those scales and learning your instrument. I'm gonna set you over it. Why don't you try serving? Your keyboard playing, you're faithful with that. Why don't you try playing the piano? You have been faithful teaching one session of worship team. Why don't you teach for a year and 2 years? You've been faithful serving in one team, overseeing one team. Why don't you serve two? You have been faithful over talking to a team of people. Why don't you talk to all the congregation members in sermons? With great faithfulness comes great opportunities. And for me, with growing faithfulness comes growing opportunities. Second point I want you to make and just point out for you. Would you believe me if I told you high school university Carson is the most timid and fearful and extreme introvert you will ever meet? Nobody believes me. Somebody's nodding because you see me. I was the person that when you go to high school, people will ask me, are you mute? Because I don't talk. Where am I now? I'm speaking to you for 35 minutes now. The point is you think you know yourself, but you don't even know. Discover your talents that God's going to give you, and He will grow. He will give you new things. Try new things. Just step out of your comfort zone and try and be faithful in the little things. God's going to lead you to somewhere that I think you might surprise yourself. The last thing I want to say, again, this is not about me. This is about God and His generosity. This process is available to you. Not that you have to become a pastor, but you can go through this process of growing and learning and stepping out of your comfort zone and receiving more opportunities and more talents. And the whole reason why I kept pointing out how old I was, because I know so many of you are young people here. You guys have much more talents, much more opportunity and ability than I do. So you don't have You don't have to live as if you're living for nothing. You don't have to live as if you think you're not good at anything. There's nothing you look forward to. Honestly, you don't have to drag yourself to school and to work every day. You don't even have to scroll TikTok all day because you think there's nothing else in this world that's going to make you excited or passionate. Be faithful in the little things. God wants to lead you to a purposeful, rewarding life. And I pray that you are going to have a faithful life. And I pray that I will see you there when Jesus settles accounts with all of us. And maybe we'll celebrate your version of Din Tai Fung. We'll celebrate your version of the Polaris program, or your version of the pastoral calling, or you have been, how you've been faithful in your work and your marriage and all of your life. I hope and I pray that we'll see everybody there.